Welcome to Half Finished to Done, a podcast for passionate business owners like you who are ready to stop procrastinating and start finishing all of your half-done projects. I'm your host, Christina, and I'm looking forward to helping you finish your projects in a calm, sustainable way using a simple, repeatable process. All along the way, we'll be working through the mental, emotional, and logistical obstacles that are standing between you and extraordinary projects. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I am super excited to have one of my coaching peers, a fellow coach, Elise. Elise, tell us about yourself and a little bit about your work.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for having me on today, Christina. So I am Elise Conroy, and I'm a life and business coach, and I really help women to show up with confidence in both life and business.
Okay, Elise, you talk about this idea of self-image all the time in your business. My first question for you is, do you use the term self-concept, self-identity, and self-image interchangeably, or is there a distinction to you?
Yes. Okay. It all feeds one another because it all comes down to the idea of how we think about ourselves, because how we think about ourselves defines how we show up in this world, how we navigate our day-to-day, who we show up as, and what we believe is possible for us.
Yes. Okay. So we are probably going to use all those terms. We're going to talk about what that looks like in your life and in your business. Okay. Why do you think it's important for people to understand their own self-image?
Because if we have an unclear self-image, meaning we don't really have an idea of who we are, it's really going to influence our success. It's going to influence our relationships. And what ends up happening is we end up trying to do what I call controlling the narrative. So when we try to control the narrative, we're trying to control how other people see us. So this leads to a life of people-pleasing and perfectionism, overworking, trying to be somebody else that we're not, because we don't really know at the core who we really are. So when we live in that space, we're going to be in that place of operating from insecurity. We're going to be operating from fear. We're going to be operating from self-doubt. And then when we get into that space, of course, we're going to procrastinate. Of course, we're going to take up all the time. Of course, we're going to see ourselves as something other than what we are. And I see a lot of times where people get stuck as in a story that, oh, I'm just this person. I'm just lazy. I can never actually get things done. And that's really not the truth. But when we believe that as the truth, that's going to influence every aspect of every result that we create in our life without us even realizing it.
Yes. Like the simplest one that I hear from my clients all the time, I'm a procrastinator, right? Not even I'm a person who procrastinates, which is also a limiting belief, but I am a procrastinator. That is my identity. And then, like you said, two other really good examples that come up in my business are I'm a people pleaser and I'm a perfectionist. And that becomes this all-encompassing identity that, like you said, then dictates how we operate. So we think we're just looking at our lives and we're like, yeah, we're just explaining what's happening, but we're actually creating what's happening. So what is your take on that?
100% true, because when we allow other people their thoughts, their judgments, their beliefs about us. And let's say your mom has told you your whole entire life, oh, you're a procrastinator. So you just believe that to be true. Once again, that's just going to be your identity. You're going to be introducing yourself as, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm a procrastinator, right? I go to myself and I think my whole entire life, I define myself as a perfectionist. And it has been so challenging for me to break that belief about myself because for so many years, I only showed up if I was perfect. I overworked to make sure everything I did was perfect. So I had to really start to shed the layers of all of that weight of that identity because at the core, that wasn't who I am. That wasn't how I wanted to actually start taking action in my life. I didn't want everything to be perfect, but yet I didn't know how to change it. And so I almost had to do a bridge to where I'm like, okay, I don't want to be a perfectionist anymore. And it started with the awareness and the intention. And then I started looking at myself as a recovering perfectionist. And there's still moments where it comes up because I had to consciously break this belief about myself. Because when I was allowing all of other people's ideas, like, oh, Elise, she always gets it perfect. She always looks perfect. She always does the perfect work. And I'm like, well, now I have to be perfect.
Right.
And it was that scary part of like, oh God, I'm going to let everybody else down if I'm not perfect. And then add on societal beliefs and teachings and conditioning and all the things. I'm like, well, I have to be this person. And I'm like, no, but I actually don't. So when I removed all of the other people's thoughts, all of the other people's ideas, conditioning, who was I really at the core? I'm not a perfectionist. I'm a mess, a beautiful mess, an imperfect mess. And that's good enough. But it took a lot of time to unwind all of that because it was so true to me for so long that that was just who I was. I was Elise and I had to get it perfect.
Okay, I think you've raised two really, really important points for people to hear. And the first one is, in my opinion, sometimes it's actually helpful to apply the label first as an awareness tool, and then you have to work to detangle yourself from that identity. So for example, if you are engaging in all of these behaviors where you're like, I'm constantly tweaking and I'm constantly editing and I'm constantly going through 100 different drafts before I send something off. And then after I send it off to my client, I worry about it for 3 days. If you're doing all of those behaviors, I think there is a helpful time to be like, oh, those are perfectionist behaviors. Yes. Got it. I now understand myself on a new level. And then you work to detangle that. Like, okay, now that doesn't have to be my whole identity, but I think there is benefit to labeling it. The second thing that you said, which is super important, and I always tell my clients this, is your self-image. You didn't pull it out of your ass. Like, you did not make it up to make yourself feel terrible. You were in a world when you were younger, in your family, in your culture, that conditioned and influenced your self-image. And that is so important for people to keep in mind, because I think once we start talking about self-image and self-concept, people then can use that to beat themselves up. Like, oh, I shouldn't be thinking I'm a perfectionist or a procrastinator or a people pleaser. I'm like, you inherited these beliefs as a child, and now as an adult, it's your job to detangle it if you want to. What are your thoughts on that?
So true. And I think about, it's almost the deconditioning process is like removing the bumper stickers off of your body that the world has given you, just one by one, and looking at it piece by piece. Because when I really started going back 6 years ago to doing this work on myself and deconditioning myself from being a perfectionist, I had no idea how many areas it showed up in my life. And what this caused me to do was become a procrastinator. So when I was still working in corporate in the beauty industry, I would stay late working on a deck for Sephora or Ulta, whatever it might be, moving images 1 millimeter to the left, 1 millimeter to the right. Like, that was going to break the presentation. And when I started gaining awareness on it, I started looking at, no wonder why I'm here until 10 o'clock at night. No wonder why I'm not meeting my deadlines, is because I'm so consumed with making sure it's perfect that now I've become a procrastinator. And hold on. So I looked at each behavior one by one, because like you said, it all starts with the awareness and looking at how one influenced the other and really looking back at, why am I doing this in the first place? Because if we don't know the why we do what we do, we're never going to be able to change the behavior. So I got to the root of it and I started thinking about all the times as a kid. And this is something I find with my clients. We always trace it back, like you said, to some point in childhood of how I truly believed if I was perfect, then I would be liked, I would be accepted, I'd be teacher's pet, I'd be good enough, I'd be all the things. So I was always the overachiever, but it always took me an extremely long amount of time to get things done while I was in that process. And then once again, I would beat myself up because I didn't get it done on time, it wasn't good enough, whatever. And so I noticed when I was looking at each of, let's call it peeling off those bumper stickers, what was the self-talk that was associated with that bumper sticker? Because usually it was pretty ugly. And I was really mean to myself. And I have a loud inner mean girl who loves to yell at me and who loves to say all the horrible things when I'm not being perfect or when I am procrastinating. And that would make me stay in the process even longer. And then it would take me even longer to get it done because now I'm in the shame cycle. So I started noticing specific words. And you mentioned one of them just a second ago, which is should. Anytime I'm shoulding myself, I'm creating shame and judgment. And nothing good ever comes out of shitting myself. So when I notice, well, you should have done this. Oh, okay, here we are again. And then I just pause and I slow things down and I look at it through the lens of compassion and love. Because when I start looking at it through love, right, through compassion, there goes the shame and the judgment. It's like, oh, we're here again. Oh, this is just old conditioning. Oh, this is the old perfectionist tendencies dying hard. And then I don't make it mean anything about me. It doesn't have the weight that it used to. It doesn't spin me out in the way that it used to. But once again, it all started with the awareness of all of these different pieces coming together to create this identity.
Right. I think this is why you're helping me articulate why I'm so annoyed generally by the phrase done is better than perfect. And I know, I'm just going to say, I know for a lot of people, it is like their saving grace. It is the sentence that helps them so much. So if it works for you, awesome. Ignore this. But the reason why I think that bugs me is because it's very simplistic and it's essentially saying, just do it. And what you're saying is you need to understand why you are not doing it. You need to understand that this is not about white knuckling your way through putting something out in the world. It's about understanding, oh, I'm scared to finish this because I'm scared of how it's going to be received. Because if it's not received positively, I will make that mean something terrible about me. Or someone else will make it mean something bad about me, and then I'll just agree with them. And so it's really taking that time to be like, what is actually going on here? And where did I get this belief system from?
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to talk yourself out of it and forcing yourself into action.
100%, because we've got to go deep into the why. And there are so many different layers to the why. And this is where if we don't go into the why, we can get ourselves in trouble, because now we're informing our current actions, our current beliefs about ourselves based on who we were in the past. And that's where it gets really dangerous, because you don't know why you've defined yourself as a procrastinator. You don't know why you've defined yourself as lazy or perfectionist, whatever that label is that you're wearing. So now you're starting to show up as current you, trying to do new big things. And then here comes old identity creeping in. Hey, remember when you didn't get that done on time and you failed and everybody made fun of you, or your mom told you for your whole entire life that you were never going to get it done and you were never going to be that person. And now all of a sudden, you're not getting anything done. You're just in that place of feeling the shame and all of the pain. So we've got to go deep to feel it in order to heal it, which is where most of us do not want to spend any time. We're like, nope, feelings aren't safe. Get out of here. But yes, we've got to go deep beneath the surface to figure out, where is that part of ourselves that might still need some tending? Where is that part of ourselves that might need some love, some acknowledgement, some safety? Because for most of us, we don't even realize the why is, or what the why is of why we do what we do. But then we wonder why we keep getting the same results over and over and over and can't break the pattern. It's just because we haven't gone deep enough to see what the root of it is yet.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of us can do that by talking it out. But like you said, often we need to actually go back and feel. And when I say that, I'm like, I always mean crying. That's what I, when I say feel, I actually mean crying. And really allow those memories to come back up and be with the emotion again of what it created. So I want to actually give an example. I was just working with a client on this who has ADHD. And if anyone knows the stats around ADHD, it's very underdiagnosed in women specifically. And so we always think of the hyperactive little boys, and that's why not as many people are paying attention to, like, okay, how does this actually show up for women? And so a lot of women will be like, I was performing actually really well, but I had ADHD. So I was talking to a client about this, and we're just going back to some of her specific memories where she was bullied and called out and literally isolated from other people so that they could basically force her to focus. Then when she looks at her current behaviors, all of the current behaviors make so much more sense. Of course you're doing the things you're currently doing because you're overcompensating for the fact that you haven't healed those past memories. I'm sure this comes up a lot, obviously, personally, probably, but also yes, professionally. Yeah.
Yeah, because if I'm working with people on confidence, there's a reason why you're blocking yourself from confidence. And usually we don't have awareness when I start working with a client on what that specific thing is. So I'll actually have them do a 5-day study when we first start working together. And I encourage anybody who's listening to think about doing this for yourself too, just to see what your brain's actually saying to you. Because until we dive into it, we usually don't even have awareness on it. And it's almost like we have a greatest hits album of things that our brain says to us and reinforces all the time. But we're so used to listening to it that we don't even realize what track is what. So we kind of got to pull that apart and separate it. What I like to do is have them study, what is your brain actually telling you? And then break down the percentage of thought to say how much of your thought per day was negative, how much of your thought was positive. And then start to study the specific words. And then we start to go in and diagnose, what is it that you tell yourself about yourself every day? Is it, oh, this is going to take me forever. It's impossible to finish this. I can't do this. Because then you're going to start to see that narrative. And then you start to go into the next layer, which is, what does my inner mean person say to me, right? Actually looking at those nasties. And we don't look at it through a lens of judgment. We don't look at it through a lens of shaming ourselves. We look at it through curiosity of, that's interesting. Where did this come from? Was this my belief, or was this somebody else's belief that someone handed to me that I had no idea? Because like you said, we weren't programmed with these beliefs. We weren't born all of a sudden just thinking, I'm a procrastinator. I'm lazy. I'm a perfectionist. Right. These were things
that those procrastinating babies, you know,
yeah. They're taking too long to go through their life. They need to speed it up, right? Yeah. And then we look at also, what does your brain say is impossible for you? I could never do something that big. That's not meant for me. I'm too late. I'm behind, whatever it might be. And then we start to get ahead of it and we start to take charge and take 100% responsibility over what our brain is saying, because you've got to rewrite the story. Because if not, your greatest hits album is just going to keep playing. So we got to come out with a new album. We got to write some new songs to listen to every day. So how do you actually want to see yourself? So right now, if you're seeing yourself as a procrastinator who's lazy and never gets things done on time, okay, maybe you can start to see yourself as, you know what? I can finish by the time it's due. And that might be your one bridge. And then all of a sudden, your next step is to see yourself as the person who gets things done ahead of time with ease, right? Like, let's add in with that with ease part, right? Because we make it so hard on ourselves. And then you think about, how do you want to feel every single day? Because right now, if you're just beating yourself up and you're in that shame spiral and you're in that loop, okay, we know that's not working. So maybe you don't want to feel doubt. Maybe you don't want to feel insecurity or fear, whatever it is that's ruling you right now. Okay, well, how do you want to feel instead? Is it confident? Is it secure? Is it knowing that you can get things completed? And then you start thinking and dreaming into reality. Okay, well, if that was that version of me, how would I be showing up? What would I be doing? What would I not be doing? And I know you and I have talked a lot about this when it comes to that self-image, because we've got to break the idea of, oh, I just see myself as sitting in front of the TV watching Netflix and not getting anything done versus, you know what? I was the person that took one step today and that felt really good. And I was inspired to take another step. And then I did another step and, ooh, now I'm starting to feel confident. Okay, yeah, I can take one more step. And that's how we shift. And you don't even realize that it's happening when you look at it from this micro of a level, because you're just breaking things apart. You're just doing one thing different every single day. So we've got to try on that future self concept in real time. And I love naming this version. So I'm very financially motivated. So I love to name via money. I'm like, okay, what is $1 million me doing, right? Because then I think about, oh, she's not going to be in a place where she's sitting there beating herself up, wasting time, thinking about all the silly things that get in her way. She would be taking big action. She would be believing in herself. She'd be aligning with people. It helps to kind of expand the vision. So you're not just stuck in the now. You're not stuck in the micro. You're not stuck in that dread of, oh, I don't know how to change, right? Because now you're giving yourself a bigger picture to look towards.
Right. Okay. For anyone who's listening who is like, this sounds kind of familiar. This is literally the exact process that I just went through in my anti-procrastination challenge. So yes, yes. The three steps of, yep, crafting a three-year vision, then aligning your identity and emotions, and then acting as if, so making decisions as that version of yourself. So I'm like, this is going to sound familiar to a lot of people. And I know you have an incredible process that totally mirrors. We're clearly on the same page. So before we talk more, though, about the confident self-image, because I do want to go there for sure and how to actually make that happen for people, I would love to go back just for a little bit to this idea of what are the other core belief systems of, in our case, a procrastinator, and just kind of calling out what we see with our clients, because I want people to just start gaining awareness. As coaches, we see it crystal clear. My client will talk to me for 3 minutes and I'm like, oh, I can tell you your core belief systems immediately, but only because I've trained myself. So I'm like, let's help people make that easier to see. So I have a few that I wrote down, but I'm totally putting you on the spot here, but we can just kind of bat this back and forth of like core belief systems that keep procrastinators procrastinating.
Yes. I'm literally writing down the three that just came to mind as you yes, asked this.
Perfect. Okay. I'll tee you up. The first one I thought of was there's not enough time.
Yeah.
It's too scary to feel the pain if this doesn't work out.
Ooh, yes.
Right. Which leads to that avoidant behavior. I can't dot, dot, dot.
That was my number one.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I can't. Yeah. And I'll say what I see with my clients is when people are thinking I can't, what's so crazy is that 99.9% of the time is they're like, I can't do this thing because I don't have the innate ability. And I'm like, that's not an innate ability. That's a learned skill set that you just haven't learned yet. And then they're like, oh, well, I should definitely be able to do that already. And I'm like, but why? You've never learned it. And right. So we're like, we're expecting ourselves to be so far beyond where we've ever learned how to be. It's wild. So right. What
we
else do you write
down? We have to give ourselves yeah. space to be a beginner again. And I think so many of us see that as failure. And I know when I started my business, I used all of my 15 years of success against myself, but I wasn't giving myself space to learn and I wasn't giving myself grace to grow. you know, not punish myself for the things that I didn't know and use that against myself. But okay, so the other two things that I wrote down, obviously I can't, I want to spend one more second talking about that because it's so valuable. One of the big teachings that I have is it's actually called the CAN mindset. And I call CAN, when I break it down in an acronym, confident action now. Because if we're not in that space where we're even believing that we can do something, of course it's never going to happen. So what we do is we talk ourselves out of what's possible, and then we get ourselves into a space of what's impossible because we start really truly believing, well, I could never do that. I can't. I have all these other barriers and excuses and limitations, and we don't even realize we're talking ourselves out of it. And usually when we get into that mentality, it leads me to the second thing I wrote down, which is fueled by, I don't know how.
Yeah. I just wrote that down.
Yep. Because if we're in the space where we don't know how, we're giving our power away at the highest level. We're believing that the answer's outside of ourselves. We're always looking for somebody to tell us what to do next. And then let's layer on the third thing, which is it has to be perfect. So what will they think about me if I don't get it right? Oh my God, it has to be perfect so I don't fail. I don't want to get rejected. So I've got to go above and beyond. And next thing you know, we're taking all the time and nothing actually gets done. I think in conjunction, all of what you said, and especially I love the one that you said about not having time. I don't have time for this, because it all goes back to this lack mentality, and lack is just the belief there's never going to be enough. So that can show up at every level and every outfit in every form. So we've got to be careful to really step into the belief that we have enough to get started. And all I need to do is take one step today, because one step is going to lead to two. And two is going to lead to 10, and 10 is going to be to 20. And next thing you know, you're going to be so much farther ahead than you ever realized. And if we think of, if we take one micro step every day where you'd be at the end of the year versus sitting on the couch and beating yourself up for not doing anything and procrastinating your way through life, obviously the results are going to be very different. And what starts to happen is confidence is built in that space of, I did that thing today. Okay. Okay. And all of a sudden you got a little more fuel. You got a little more pep in your step and you're like, okay, I can do one more thing tomorrow. And it's like, oh, I did that. And we're taking bigger action. And then we're making bolder moves and we're making bigger decisions and we're tuning out the noise from other people and we're just in our zone.
Okay. I want to pause you.
Yeah.
I always laugh. I sent you a voice memo about this recently. I sent a memo to Elise and I was like, the thing I love about you is you're so genuinely motivating for other people. Like, you genuinely believe in other people's ability to be who they want to be. And I'm like, that's amazing. Hold that thought. Hold on. Because I'm like, yes, I'm so motivated. But pause real quick, because I want to just diagnose a few of the other core belief systems before we talk about the good news. Okay. Now I feel like a downer. I'm like, let's talk about the shitty news first.
You always got to slow me down, because I'm going to be like, let's go.
Yeah.
Action now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, me too. I love the action taking. But okay, I think too, I wanted to respond to your thing about not enough time, because I would say to your point of the scarcity, it's actually not just not enough time. It's not enough energy. It's not enough smarts. It's not enough support.
It's everything.
It's everything, right? Not enough of what I need. The other one that's coming up for me really strongly that I hear from a lot of my clients is it's outside of my control. Do you hear that a lot with your clients?
Yeah. And this is why I teach 100% result responsibility, right? Because everything in some aspect we can influence. We might not have control over the overall outcome, but we can control how we show up. We can control the decisions that we make. We can control how we think about ourselves through the process. This is why it all comes back to self-concept, right?
Okay, perfect. Elise, I've held you back enough. Let's talk about how to do this. So you've told us some of the techniques already, right? So small micro habit changes, building up your wins, and then using that to compound your self-confidence. So being like, oh, I'm amazing. Like you said, pep in your step. What other strategies do you recommend to your clients if they've gotten that awareness of, okay, I have all these beliefs that are not leading me where I want to go. They're not creating the results I want, ready to change.
Yes. Okay. So what I love to introduce people to is a concept that I created called the confidence trifecta. And what this really starts with is acceptance. So there's three pillars to this. So acceptance is just being in that space of, yeah, so I've been a procrastinator. So I haven't gotten things done in the way that I wanted to. So I haven't been the person that I wanted to be. But this is where it comes into taking responsibility, right? Because we don't have to stay here. So we can accept everything that's happened. We can accept the past. We can accept all the failure. We can accept all the judgments that people have given us. But it comes on the other side of with that acceptance of making a bold decision that we don't want to stay here. And we don't want to continue to identify ourselves as this person. And we want to do something different. So the first step is really just accepting, yeah, I've been here. No big, cool. This doesn't mean anything about me, but I'm choosing as of today to do something different. And after we go through that period of acceptance, and that might take a minute, and that's okay. There's no timeline on this. We go into a state of really looking at our belief, right? So why do we believe what we believe? And what do we want to believe instead? Because if our belief system is all founded and built upon lack or insecurity or doubt or fear, whatever it might be, or limitation, right? For so many of us, we build our belief on limitation of, I could only do this. I could only get so far. This isn't for me, whatever it might be. So when we start to actually unwind our belief system, diagnose where it came from, and then create new beliefs, what happens and what leads us to the third pillar is trust is built. Because without trust, without believing that we can actually do something big, without accepting who we truly are and what we want to do in this world, we're not going to ever get to that place of having true confidence, because these are the three pillars we want to build our foundation of confidence on. And when we don't trust ourselves, we're always going to be delegating our decisions. We're always going to be thinking someone else has the solution. Someone knows better, taking more time to do things because, oh God, is this good enough? Versus just saying, you know what? It is good enough because I decided it was good enough. And if it's not good enough, then I can decide it wasn't good enough later and I'll do something different and I'll learn from it. Versus just choosing to stay in that place. But where I see all of my clients who come to me struggle, especially in business, is one of these three things is missing. Either they are not giving themselves permission to accept that maybe they have a huge goal, but their whole entire life, someone in their life said, you could never do that. You're not the person who does that. You're too lazy to get that done. Things like that aren't meant for you. Or they don't believe in themselves because maybe it could be as simple as an ex-partner said something nasty about them. A boss made a horrible comment about them. Their best friends made a dig at them. Their mom, their dad, whoever it might be. And then when it comes to trust, if we've had a bad track record of decision-making, we've had a lot of failure, we've had a lot of rejection, we've had a lot of things that created shame and that's never been tended to, of course you're not going to trust yourself. So usually one of these three areas is off. So if we're having issues with confidence, we've got to look here first.
Oh, okay. I am such a visual person. So just having that trifecta is so helpful. And I wanted to add in a comment too about what taking on other people's limiting beliefs. Often those things that we've taken on to limit us are not ever meant in a mean way.
Yeah.
So someone will, right? That's like our first thought is like, oh, someone had to have said it in a terrible way. And that does happen. But often we're carrying around these stories that we're like, the person had no bad intention. They didn't mean anything negative about us, but we took it on and we used it to feel bad about ourselves and to limit ourselves. So keep that in mind as well, as it could have been a lot more of an innocuous comment.
Yep. And usually it's coming from not a place of being malicious. It's coming from a place of trying to keep us safe. And it's usually their own self-imposed limit, you know, and I've gone through this with my own family of they never saw big visions. They never saw big dreams. So they wanted me to have a very traditional life. They're like, this is what you should do. And I'm like, oh, but no. And when I was 17, I literally made them a PowerPoint presentation to show them why I'm going to go into the beauty industry and I'm going to do all these things and I'm going to have this multi-million-dollar career. And they're like, who are you? But just because they tried to keep me safe didn't mean that that had to determine my reality. I got to decide. I had that power.
I just thought of the simplest little example is I was working a corporate job right before I started my business. And I had been there for about 9 months. And I talked to one of my friends and she in a very well-meaning way was like, you need to stay to the year mark. For sure, you need to stay a year. It will be frowned upon if you don't. And I was like, that's very logical advice. I'm going to quit. Thank you for the clarity. And it was like, and I quit. And I was like, because in my mind, I was like, oh, turns out I did the corporate thing. I'm not cut out for this. I don't like it. I want to be a business owner. No one's going to look at my resume,
right?
At least for the next 10 years. So no one's going to care if it was a year or 9 months. And I knew that for myself. And so hearing her give me that advice, I could be like, oh yeah, that's not advice for me, but I appreciate you.
And see, this is the interesting thing about how societal conditioning gets passed forward without us even realizing it. And then we start to wear it as a bumper sticker. Oh, I have to stay at a job for more than a year or else it's frowned upon. And this is how those teachings keep going forward. And now it's just a way that we start to identify of, oh God, I left a job before a year. That means something negative about me. I wasn't really committed. I didn't really want it that bad, whatever it is. So I love that example because that's something that someone actually just brought to me and they were saying they wanted to quit their job after 2 months. And they were worried that was going to make future employers look at them as irresponsible. And I told her, I'm like, no. Hold on. We've got to destigmatize this. No, it's not that world anymore.
Yeah. And if your vision
we're not saying be reckless, right? And I do think it's important to say that different people have different risk tolerance. I happen to have a very high risk tolerance. So I was, fuck it, I'm leaving, I'm doing a business. And then I would hear advice after the fact. People would be like, you should definitely build your business while working your job. And I was like, that's very sound advice. So glad I didn't do that. But there are plenty of people who need to slow roll it. So just keep in mind that it also matters is, I think, an inherent risk tolerance, but I do think you can build that risk tolerance if you want to.
Yes, I love that. That's a good disclaimer.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I'm like, we're not saying do something you're going to regret, but you can handle that too. Okay, so take us back. So acceptance was the first one.
Yes, belief and trust.
Belief and trust. Okay, perfect. So those are the three pillars. Let's talk about what life looks like when you're locked into that triangle. And specifically, what I would love to talk about is life as a project finisher, because that's who I'm working with, people who want to consistently finish extraordinary projects in order to have the ROI in terms of their time, their money, their social capital, their impact, their emotions. So let's talk about that. What have you seen in your life? What have you seen with your clients when people are really living into that triangle?
I love this question. When you're living in this triangle, there is no glass ceiling. You're just truly living in that place of limitless possibilities. When you're in this place, you're spending your time looking at what life is going to look like after you've finished. You're going to be thinking of the brilliance. You're going to be thinking of fulfillment. You're going to be thinking of the money you're going to be making, the impact that you're going to have, versus being in that space of the now of how am I going to get this done? Oh my God, this is too much. I can't do this. To where when those thoughts do come, you're going to say, wait, actually, okay, so I'm here. This thought is coming. Yeah, I get it. I'm scared. I see you. But I believe, and I know what's going to happen on the other side of this. And I trust myself to get it done. Let's go. So now that's where the confident action really starts, right? Because we're not in a place of giving ourselves those self-imposed limits. We're not in the place of empowering excuses. We're not in the place of sitting on the couch and beating ourselves up, because we know we have big things to do because that belief is so high. We know who we are. We know what we're going to do on the other side of this. We know the impact that it's going to have in the world. So we got to go. And now all of a sudden there's this sense of urgency. And I like to think of it when I wake up in the morning, when I think about the work that I do every day, I wake up with this sense of urgency where it's like a lightning bolt, just electric shock shooting through my body to get out of bed. And it is the most incredible feeling, because I will tell you, I didn't live in this place my whole entire life. I lived in a place where I would wake up in the morning and there was dread. And like, oh God, I've got to go. I've got to do it. And it was not that feeling. But when I think of the impact of the work that I'm doing in this world and what it has with people and how big I want to take this and how much I want to do, I got to get out of bed. And now I'm walking through my day with that fuel and that momentum and that inspiration and that intrinsic motivation where I don't have to think. I used to say, oh, I wish someone just had a pill for motivation.
That would make like, turns out it's me.
Yeah. And now that vision, because I had that trifecta in place, I got to get up. I got things to do in this world. And that is a powerful place to live, right? Because then I'm like, oh, but I can't do this. And I'm like, yeah, actually I can. Here's all the ways. And then my brain's like, oh, but we don't have time. Okay, well, here's how I'm going to create the time. So I've become my own excuse buster. I've become my own mirror to say, oh, Elise, you're getting in your way again. Hold on. Do you have this vision to fulfill this mission? Do you want to stay here or do you want to go there? Because look at this belief. And that belief is so strong. And that trust in myself is so strong to get there. And I know who I am and what I need to do to get there. So I'm like, okay, let's stay here, right?
Two things I want to comment on from what you just said. The first thing is, I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but I used to talk about this all the time. It's the motivation fairy. Yeah. And how we will go through our lives and we'll act like there's a little fairy who comes and she either blesses us with motivation or she's taking the day off and we don't get motivation that day. Yes. And so be it. Versus what I teach is motivation on demand, where I'm like, you want to feel motivated? You know how to create motivating thoughts that get you motivated. Let's go. And so that big distinction of, again, it's like it's either outside your control or it's in your control. Like you said, 100% results responsibility. I'm responsible for my motivation. Now let's get to work. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I also want to be clear here that it's not always as simple, or maybe not even often as simple as, I have a negative thought, I see it clearly, and I just move past it, right? And sometimes because we've trained ourselves so much, it is that. But I'm like, sometimes you have like three shitty days and you're kind of working and you, but you kind of feel slower than normal. And then you come to a coaching session. Hypothetically, if you're me, you cry to Elise and Elise gives you a pep talk. And sometimes you really do need that outside perspective. You need to talk it out. You need to be like, here's what's dragging me down and here's what feels heavy and here's where I'm completely out of belief. This happens to me during my launches where I'm like, the launch is for sure not going to get me the results I want. And instead of beating myself up for thinking that, I work on being like, yeah, of course I'm going to hit my own, like you said, glass ceiling. And then I'm going to move past it at a better and higher level than ever.
Yes. I love that. And this is what comes back to taking 100% result responsibility, because you get to decide if you stay in this. And sometimes we need time to stay in it. Sometimes we got to feel it out. It's, we don't want to rush through it, but there's also a point where you can choose to say, okay, I'm not going to bottle this up anymore. And I'm going to talk to somebody about it. And that's when the shift starts to happen. And if we're just keeping it to ourselves and we're scared to say, oh God, I'm feeling this way, someone's going to think I'm a failure, someone might think that I should know how to do this by now, we're only costing ourselves success and time and money here. And I love the example, like when we, and you and I have had our conversations and it's like, okay, I just need to like throw up really quick and get it all out and just make sense of it, you know, because sometimes we don't even know what's going on yet. We know we just don't feel good. And when you're in that space, like I notice for myself, anytime I get into a space of discomfort and I want to avoid it, that's the time I need to lean in the most. And that's the time either I need to talk about it or I just need to say, what's really going on here? And I'll put my hand on my heart and I'll just listen and I'll let my subconscious come up. And this has taken a long time to create this relationship with myself and have this honest relationship with myself where I'm not judging myself for not being here. So, oh God, I should know how to do this already, whatever it might be. And I just see it. This happened the other day. And I was like, what's really going on? Why am I feeling insecure right now? And I just held my heart. And it was like, oh, because you put yourself out there and you allowed yourself to be seen. And this feels really vulnerable. And I was like, okay, so this is just a little bit of fear of vulnerability. It doesn't feel good. Okay, what do I want to do about this? And I was giving myself my own power back in that moment versus just closing the door on it and hiding from it and pretending it wasn't there. I chose to see it. And we all have that choice. And does it feel good to see it? No. No, that's why we hide from it. But that's the power that you have, is to say, okay, I'm going to choose to do something about this. And once again, choose to sit in it. Because once again, some of my most powerful breakthroughs in my life, some of my clients' most powerful breakthroughs have come in the space from not rushing out of the feels and just allowing yourself to be in it and having your biggest pity party ever. Like, I'm never going to do it. This is, nothing's working. This is terrible, right? That's okay too. But at some point we got to turn the page, right? We don't want to live in a perma state of pity party. So when we turn the page, just leaning into it and saying, you know what? Nothing's going wrong. And I always like to come back to, I'm a human having a human experience. Nothing is going wrong. This is normal. It's normal to feel scary because I'm leaving my comfort zone. I'm okay, you know? And then I do whatever I need to do, whether that's talking to somebody or just giving myself all the love and compassion, because we've got to give ourselves that grace. If not, we're just going to sit. We're going to stay exactly where we're at.
This is reminding me of what will come up with my clients sometimes where they're like, well, it's not going to help to whine.
Yes.
And I'm like, wait, sometimes it does help to whine. Or they're like, I mean, cry, I don't have time to cry about it. And I'm like, okay, but I'm telling you, after you cry, and it's going to take you probably like maybe 15 minutes max, you will feel such a deep level of catharsis that will make it so much lighter to then go take action. So anytime you're thinking like, I need to buck up, I just need to get over it, chances are you actually don't need to do that. Chances are you actually need to get it out and let yourself have that space. And the irony is, when you actually allow that to happen, again, it takes usually 15 to 20 minutes, maybe an hour max, instead of festering in it for weeks and months and years.
Yes. I always give the example, this is so perfect, that it's like our emotions are like a river and they need to flow. But for so many of us, we put up the dam. And at some point, those emotions are going to get so strong and that dam is going to break. And that's when we become the emotional pressure cooker that blows. So we've got to give those little steam releases. And we don't want to put our own dam, our self-imposed dam up to block ourselves. Because once again, that's when the emotions get bigger. That's when it takes us over. And that's when the action stops, because we have something unremedied that's going on inside of us that's completely feels terrible. We don't want to take action from that place of feeling terrible.
Right. Yeah. So I did this exercise with my clients where I have them say those core belief systems of like a half finisher, procrastinator. So those belief systems you and I have just talked about. And then I'll say, what are the core belief systems of a project finisher? And what's always fascinating to me is that we idealize the beliefs of a project finisher. So one example of that is people will be like, well, as a project finisher, I just will feel good all the time. And I'm like, no, you won't. You're going to feel like shit half the time, but then you're going to get over it. Yeah. And so when you think about the core beliefs of a project finisher, make sure you're taking into account that you're a human.
Yes.
Right. Or people are like, I'll be energized 24/7 and I'll work 12-hour days with complete focus. And
no.
How are you going to do that? Yeah. Right. So really, when you make that list of what are the core beliefs of a project finisher that I want to embody, what's actually realistic there?
I love
stretch
that.
Yourself and make it realistic.
Yeah. And it could be something as simple as, I'm somebody who always figures it out. I'm somebody who's resourceful. I'm somebody who can do it. It can be the simplest things just to start that belief shift. So good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's spend more time here though. And for our last few minutes, it's like, what other core beliefs do you see in yourself as you evolve and in your clients who are those project finishers who are getting the things done that they want to?
Yeah, I just truly believe, I've reached a point in my life where I truly believe that no matter what it is, I'm going to figure it out. Because I know no matter what life has given me, I found a way to get to where I want to be. No matter how ugly, no matter how pain, it's how much pain I've gone through so much personally in the last couple of years. And I just have made the decision to be the woman who doesn't let anything stand in my way anymore. And once again, I might have to stay in the ugly for a minute. I might have to be here. I might have to give myself lots of cuddles. But I chose, this was a very bold decision on the other side of losing a baby. Of I'm going to choose all of this pain and I'm going to choose healing and I'm going to choose to use this as fuel. That no matter what life gives me, I'm going to choose to see life as happening for me, not to me. And I surrendered my victim card. Because then, once again, I got back in the driver's seat of my life and I no longer felt like anybody else needed to make these decisions for me because I knew no matter what I faced, that I was going to learn from it, I was going to grow from it, I was going to create value from it, and that this pain wasn't going to be for nothing. And it profoundly changed the way that I showed up in this world, the way that I navigated my life, the way that I navigated business, my relationships, because I knew I was just always going to be the woman that figured it out and used what happened to me, right, to see is happening for me. To then share how other people can get through that too. So my self-image now, as much as life can hurt, as much as these curveballs, and we've talked so much about this year, right? These curveballs have spun me out. I always come back stronger than ever. I always am resilient. And that's to me, when I think of myself in that way, I'm like, of course I feel confident. Of course I feel like I can figure it out. Because I know no matter what ugly feeling I'm gonna face, no matter what curveball smashes me right in the face, I'm going to come back stronger on the other side of that because I'm going to choose to be the woman that doesn't let that stop me.
Oof. Okay. That's so good. You're making me think about mine too. And what came up for me when you said that was I have that same philosophy of every single time I'm in a rut or a funk or a dip or there's something hard going on, I will use that to become more of the person I want to be. And I will help people with that. But specifically what came up for me was I will be stronger, but softer.
Ooh.
And that is what I've always noticed when I go through these really hard times is I am stronger as a person, so more resilient, but I'm less harsh and hard. And that dichotomy is fascinating to me. I've never seen it like that until this exact moment, but it's like I'm more relaxed than ever, but stronger than ever.
Right. Because that love is coming through.
Yeah. And the empathy and the compassion. Yeah. The other one that I want to add, because I think it'll be really helpful for everyone to hear, is one of my core beliefs is I can make sense of every single habit that I have. So we tend to look at our habits and we're like, if I have this habit, it's a moral failing, it's a character flaw, versus being like, I can just diagnose why I have this habit and then decide whether to keep it or not. And our habits then add up to our results. So that ability to be like, I can always, always, always understand this on a new level, that gives me a lot of confidence.
I love that. And it leads, that just spawned one for me of just because this is who I've been doesn't mean this is who I have to be moving forward. Just because this is where I've been doesn't mean this is where I have to stay. right? Because it all comes back to that belief that you want to do something different and that you can.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect place to end. Thank you so much for joining today. How can people follow up with you?
You can follow me on Instagram at yoursoulmakeup, and you can visit my website, www.soulmakeup.com.
Perfect. Go follow Elise. Get some more help on self-image. Thank you so much for joining us today, Elise.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Thank you for listening to the Half Finished to Done podcast. If you're ready to become a self-assured repeat project finisher, the best place to work with me is in my 8-week group coaching program, Half Finished to Done Live. You'll leave our time together with one finished project and the skills you need to finish any project, personal or business, in the future. Just head to peakcoaching.co/HFDLive for your next step. Can't wait to work with you.